New Insights on Paradigms and Principles. When my son Nathan was young, he struggled with social anxiety. Consequently, he missed a lot of school during his early elementary years. I remember trying to get him out of the car one morning when he was a first grader. I had to pry his fingers one by one off the car seat and hand him to the principal. The principal, who had come out of the school to meet me in the parking lot, threw Nathan over his shoulder and carried him into the school while Nathan was slugging him in the back. I got in my car and cried. In second grade, I persuaded Nathan to play baseball. When we arrived at the first practice and he saw the other players and the coach, he got so frightened that he flopped on the ground and played dead, inspired by books we'd read about surviving bear attacks. I tried to get him off the grass, but he wouldn't move. The coach tried to persuade him, but he didn't make a sound. He played dead the entire practice. Another time, while attending a football game, Nathan was being loud and kept kicking the seat in front of him. I noticed people staring. In desperation, I squeezed Nathan's arm, and I said sharply, "Just stop it." At that moment, I felt ashamed of my reaction. I was embarrassed about my anger and tone of voice because I was so harshly judging this innocent little boy. It was as if my conscience said to me, "How dare you judge Nathan like that? Do you know who this boy is? This is a remarkable boy with unlimited potential. You have no right to treat him or think of him disapprovingly. Just you wait and see who he becomes." This epiphany was so unexpected, so profound, that it impacted me for the next several days. Later, I told my wife about the experience and how I had had a complete paradigm shift towards Nathan. There was a special boy under all that anxiety. We just needed to be patient with him, believe in him, and allow him to develop at his own pace. Slowly, Nathan began to change. A big breakthrough came in fourth grade when he was asked to speak at a school event on Habit 5. He came home and said, "Dad, please call the school and tell them that I'm not speaking. I know they only asked me because you're the 7 Habits guy." For a moment, I thought that maybe I should call the school because he might play dead when he got up to speak. But then I reassessed and thought, no, Nathan can do this. A couple of weeks later, Nathan stood in front of 200 people and gave a great speech that he'd written himself. He almost fainted during the speech, but had the courage to pull it off. His confidence grew tremendously that day, and he began looking for other speaking opportunities. Believe it or not, by the time Nathan got to high school, he was one of the most outgoing, talkative, and confident kids you'd ever meet. Nathan's weakness became his strength. And because he went through so many challenges as a kid, he now goes out of his way with love and compassion to help others who are struggling. Once my wife and I saw Nathan's potential, we treated him differently, and it made all the difference. That's the power of a paradigm shift. See, do, get. My father used to say, "You don't get it. No one gets it. Paradigms are everything. We don't talk about them enough. If you want to make minor improvements, change your behavior. But if you want to make quantum improvements, change your paradigm." At Franklin Covey, after training millions of people in thousands of organizations, we've learned how true this is. What you see determines what you do, and what you do determines what you get. We've discovered that when people, teams, and organizations solely work on the do, the behaviors, they never get the results they seek. To get great results, you must first work on the see, the paradigms. New behaviors don't stick unless you see differently. My father felt as strongly about principles as he did paradigms, and promised us that if we lived by principles, we would always prosper over the long haul. Each of the 7 habits, for example, is based on a few key principles and paradigms, which I will highlight after each habit. The 7 habits are an organizing model or way of thinking that can help you reach your goals and solve your problems better and faster. In the PDF files that come with this program, there's a numbers game that illustrates this concept. It's called Find the Numbers. I recommend you give it a try at your earliest opportunity. Believe me, once you have this model in your head, you will never be the same. It provides a pattern for creating a life of meaning and contribution. When you have the PDF file open, take a look also at the one titled Tree Diagram. Earlier, you heard my father dividing the seven habits into private victories, habits 1, 2, and 3, and public victories, habits 4, 5, and 6. I like the tree diagram because it shows that the private victory habits are in the ground, signifying that they're personal and nobody sees them. The public victory habits are above ground, on display for everyone to see. And habit 7, the habit of renewal, is near the sun and rain, which represents our need for constant nourishment. With the seven habits, sequence matters. Over 30 years ago, when my dad was wrapping up the initial writing of this book, he told his staff, to their dismay, that he needed to start all over. He realized he had understated the importance of the sequence of the habits and needed to rewrite the book from that paradigm. The seven habits are an inside-out approach, you see. We have to win the private victory, habits 1, 2, and 3, before we can win the public victory, habits 4, 5, and 6. If, for example, you have a bad relationship with your boss, instead of trying to think win-win with her, you first need to examine yourself and identify what you may be doing wrong. Maybe you have bad motives or a hidden agenda. Anytime I have a relationship problem, my experience is that 4 out of 5 times it's me, not them. And the key to fixing the problem is getting myself right first. It's inside out. Private victories always precede public victories. In addition to knowing the importance of sequence, another great way to learn about the habits is to understand what they're not, or what I call the seven habits of highly ineffective people. Here they are. Habit 1. React. Blame all your problems on your lousy boss, your parents, your genes, your spouse, your partner, your ex, the economy, the government, or something else. Be a victim. Take no responsibility for your life. If you're hungry, eat. If you're angry, yell. If someone said something rude to you, be rude back. React. Habit 2. Begin with squat in mind. Don't plan ahead, don't set goals, and don't worry about the consequences of your actions. Go with the flow. Live for the moment and party on, dude, for tomorrow you may die. Habit 3. Put first things last. Procrastinate. Do the urgent things first, like answering every ring, bling, and beep that comes your way. You'll get to the important stuff later. Don't worry about strengthening your relationships. They'll always be there. And why exercise? You still have your health. Just make sure you spend sufficient time each day watching YouTube. Habit 4. Think, win, lose. See life as a vicious competition. Everyone's out to get you, so you'd better get them first. Don't let others succeed, because remember, if they win, you lose. If it looks like you're going to lose, however, make sure you drag that sucker down with you. Habit 5. Seek first to talk, then pretend to listen. You were born with a mouth, so use it. Talk a lot. Make sure everyone understands your views first. Then, if you must, pretend to listen by saying, uh-huh, while daydreaming about what you want for lunch. Or, if you really want their opinion, give it to them. Habit 6. Be an island. Let's face it, other people are weird because they're different from you. So why try to get along with them? Teamwork is overrated. Cooperation slows everything down, so bag it. Since you always have the best ideas, you're better off just doing things by yourself. Be your own special island. Habit 7. Burn yourself out. Be too busy driving to take time to get gas. Be too busy living to take time to recharge and renew. Don't learn new things. Avoid exercise like the plague. And for heaven's sake, stay away from good books, nature, art, music, or anything else that may inspire you. Burn, baby, burn. Clearly, these are not the habits we are after, but too often we practice them because they represent the course of least resistance, me included. In summary, I hope the seven habits give you an unforgettable framework to help you navigate and become a more effective person at home and at work. I hope you'll remember that private victories precede public victories, and I hope you'll challenge and upgrade some of your paradigms. My father was often asked, which is the most important habit? According to my siblings and me, he at one time or another said that every habit was the most important one. Habit 2, he'd pontificate, is the most important habit, because if you don't have a vision for your life, you have nothing. Or he'd say, habit 6 is the ultimate habit, because when you practice all the other habits, you arrive at synergy. Or, the most important habit of all by far is habit 1, because until you decide you're in charge, you can't practice any of the other habits. We kids always got a kick out of this. From my perspective, I'd say that the most important habit is the one you're having the most difficult time living. Good luck.